This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today we start a series of programs we're calling Why Should I Vote for You? We'll have spokesmen chosen by the Bush and Kerry campaigns here to answer our questions, and yours, about some of the major issues facing the country today. We begin with health care. And with us here in Studio 3A from the Bush campaign is Rex Cowdery, former Associate Director of the National Economic Council at the White House. Thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
And from the Kerry campaign, also here in the studio, is Christopher Jennings, who served as Senior Health Policy Advisor for former President Bill Clinton. And thank you for being here.
Glad to be here with you today.
And here are the rules for the program. We'll have questions from stakeholders, from emailers, and from callers, perhaps even from me. You will each have 1 minute to answer each question. We'll alternate who answers each question first. At my discretion, we'll allow 30-second rebuttals or follow-up questions from our listeners. Each of you will have 2 or 2.5 minutes for a closing statement, depending on how much time we have left in the program. Listeners, if you would like to pose a question to our guests, give us a call. The number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And well, let's get started. By toss of a coin, the first question goes to Mr. Cowdery of the Bush campaign, and joining us to pose it is Mel Brayman, a house painter. She's with us from St. Louis, Missouri. Ms. Brayman?
Hi.
Hi.
As someone who had cancer in 1996, I would pay about $20,000 a year right now for health care, for health insurance,
mm-hmm.
because of my pre-existing cancer. We know that folks who don't have health insurance tend to not get checkups and wait till it's often too late for treatment to be effective. So I'd like to know, like you to address, what your plans are for folks who have pre-existing conditions or simply just can't afford the exorbitant cost of health care.
Okay. Rex Cowdery.
Absolutely. I'm glad to hear that your treatment has gone well and that you are posing this question. I think this is absolutely crucial, how we, over the long run, bring access to health care to all Americans. Now, in the short run, there are a series of strategies, including things like high-risk pools in states that allow people who have pre-existing conditions to have access to insurance. But I think many of us believe that ultimately the best solution are to create pools, state pools of various kinds, or association health plans that serve to group people together to purchase health insurance, and that spread this kind of risk that individuals with long-term illnesses have. And the president has proposed a number of those strategies in his agenda.
Okay. Let's go now to Christopher Jennings, and you have a minute as well.
Thank you, Neil. Well, I think this call is a really important question, because the truth is insurers don't want to insure a burning house. Just like if you have a house on fire, they don't want to insure you. The problem in the Bush administration, of course, is that there is no policy that would address this particular problem. Unlike the president, John Kerry would allow this individual to opt into the federal employees' health benefit plan with certain tax benefits if they so qualified. Right now, today, in the marketplace, insurers will not insure these people. The high-risk pools that Rex just mentioned don't exist for many of these populations in many of these states. And to the extent people have any access to them, they frequently get kicked out of them or they can't afford them. It is not the solution to this problem. We really need to find ways to pool in ways that guarantee access to affordable health care, and John Kerry does just that.
Mm-hmm. And did that answer your question?
I think so.
Okay. Did either of you want to come back Mr. Cowdery, did you want to come back on a rebuttal there?
Well, I think it is important to point out that actually the congressional health plan is not going to be a congressional health plan. Congressmen won't be a part of that. It'll be a separate pool. It'll be a voluntary pool. And it'll pose many of the same selection problems that we have with health insurance generally. That is, people who pose significant risks and have significant histories will be attracted to it. Its premiums will go up. It sounds good, but it's not the answer.
And I'll give you 30 seconds to reply.
It certainly is better than no answer. And I have to tell you that if you provide subsidies to make it affordable and you have a requirement on health plans to cover those populations, unlike George Bush, which has no such requirement, this policy would not allow insurers to discriminate against sick and healthy population. It is far better than no answer.
Okay. Mel Brayman, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Our next question goes to Mr. Jennings of the Kerry Campaign, and joining us to pose it is Stephen Culp. He runs a company called SmartFurniture.com, and he's with us from Chattanooga, Tennessee. Mr. Culp?
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Yes, I'm calling from Chattanooga, which I am proud to say is an emerging and fairly robust entrepreneurial environment. There's been a lot done by the government and the local organizations like the Chamber to help small business get going here in the last few years, but there is one issue, and it is health care, that is making things a lot more difficult for small businesses to go, and it is one issue where we actually need some outside help from, frankly, hopefully one or two of the candidates. I wanted to ask, where do the candidates stand on helping small businesses get easier access to health care? And specifically, I wonder if the stands are similar on the one bill that's going through the Congress right now. I think it's made it through the House and it's hitting the Senate now, introduced by Olivia Snow, called the Associated Health Plans bill, which would allow small companies to pool their resources and pool their employee counts in order to get a little bit more bargaining power with the large insurance companies.
Okay. Kerry campaign advisor Christopher Jennings.
Well, this is a very big issue, small businesses affording health care. And John Kerry and John Edwards have a specific policy to address this problem. Initially, first and foremost, he would help reduce the cost of premiums directly by helping to provide relief for high-cost catastrophic expenditures through a reinsurance mechanism, which simply would reduce costs by up to $1,000 for a family for these policies. Secondly, he would allow employers, small businesses in particular, to buy into the Federal Employees Health Benefit Plan, the so-called Congressional Health Plan, and again, to be allow small businesses to pool, to buy and choose whatever health policies they so choose, thus reducing administrative burdens. Thirdly, he would provide specific tax credits for small businesses, 50% tax credits for many of them to buy this health care. Far better solution than association health plans, which would provide no financial assistance whatsoever, and which is unique in that both insurance commissioners, businesses, and others, and consumers strongly oppose.
Okay. Rex Cowdery, you'll get a minute and 5 seconds.
Okay. Thank you. This, I think, is absolutely a crucial question for small businesses that drive much of recovery. And I think it's important to ask the question, since so many of our folks who are uninsured are related to individuals who are employed in small businesses. What can we do about that? I do believe that association health plans are one way of helping small businesses purchase and obtain many of the economies that a large business can obtain to purchase policies. But I think actually more promising in many ways is the combination of a high deductible or so-called catastrophic low premium health plan that is much more affordable with health savings accounts. And the president supports the deduction of the premiums for these high deductible health plans, but also has a number of innovative ways of providing people with these portable accounts that belong to them, that they can then use to cover deductibles, out-of-pocket expenses generally, and to save for the future in a tax-free way, including contributions from the employer, contributions from the individual, and in the case of low income, contributions from the government in the form of a tax credit.
Stephen Culp, I'm wondering, did you hear something that would, if not solve your problem, help it?
Well, I understand and am familiar with some of the plans they discussed. What I'd like to know is if those plans, in their view, obviate the need for the Associated Health Plans bill, and I'm not clear if I got a clear stance where the candidates stand on that specific bill.
Okay, let's hear briefly from both. Yes.
Sure. Actually, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office projects that premiums under the association health plans for businesses who want to keep their traditional health insurance would increase in 4 out of 5 businesses, which is why governors and insurance commissioners and consumer groups all oppose association health plans, which, not surprisingly, that so too is the case with John Kerry and John Edwards. He wants to substitute as an alternative, as your question suggests, the buy-in with tax credits to the federal employees' health benefit with the reinsurance relief for high-cost cases.
And Rex Cowdery?
The president absolutely supports association health plans, that kind of pooling of purchasing power, and HSAs. The reinsurance mechanism, I hope, will come back to, because it's really a fascinating way of transferring costs from employees and employers to the American taxpayer. It is strange to call that a way of helping with health care costs. It doesn't address the true underlying issues, and I think they are substantial.
Okay. Stephen Culp, how many employees do you have at smartfurniture.com?
It changes every day since we've recently gone through a funding, but we're still less than 10. So we fall into that group that I'd say the vast majority of small businesses do. And it's my understanding that if something like this passes, you know, they're up to maybe 8.5 million uninsured workers who might then be eligible for coverage. So this is why it's an important issue to us personally, and I think on a more national scale.
Well, we appreciate the question. Thank you very much for the call. Here's an email question from Janet Hessel in Parkville, Missouri. How will your administration approach health promotion and prevention measures such as tobacco abuse and obesity? We'll go first to Rex Cowdery.
Well, you may actually have seen the recent news about the decision by CMS, that is Medicare and Medicaid, to examine obesity, to not simply from the top say that's not a disease, but to look at the effectiveness of different approaches to obesity. This is novel. This is actually revolutionary and a way to really promote preventive measures, knowing what the burden of obesity is on healthcare costs. Similarly, in other areas, I think the issues of prevention, there's often the claim made about approaches like high deductible policies that they don't promote prevention. Well, there's a specific provision that says that prevention can be covered with first dollar coverage in the catastrophic health plans. Another way that the administration promotes the intervention with proven ways of avoiding future health costs and all of the health disability that goes with that.
Bush advisor Rex Cowdery. Now let's hear from Christopher Jennings from the Kerry campaign.
Well, as Rex knows, the option to cover prevention care and health savings account is just that. It is an option. It's not a requirement. And so it would be a takeaway for most traditional plans if they substituted the health savings account for the traditional health care, which currently now is much more likely to cover preventive services. So that could be very much a takeaway. Secondly, this is the same administration who opposed FDA regulation and oversight of tobacco products, which fundamentally is the single number one cause of preventable deaths in this nation. 400,000 Americans die every year as a result of tobacco deaths, and they oppose FDA oversight over this product. Thirdly, John Kerry and John Edwards want to be very proactive on prevention, specifically by ensuring that the Medicare program be enhanced to provide new options and choices of preventive coverage, providing first-dollar coverage based on science, not on politics.
Rex Cowdery, I'm going to give you 30 seconds. We just have 50 seconds left in the segment to respond on tobacco, but I also wanted to hear, did I hear right, you wanted a commission on obesity?
No. There's a decision about obesity, and then there will be a series of decisions made about whether treatment for obesity is actually effective and cost-effective for people, which I think is an important question. The tobacco issue relates very specifically. I mean, everyone is opposed to tobacco, knows the huge cost that it creates. The question is whether the FDA regulating it as a drug is the right way to deal with this as a social problem.
And something that is a major difference between the two campaigns. That's Rex Cowdery, a surrogate for President Bush. Christopher Jennings is here from the Kerry campaign. They're answering the question, why should I vote for you on the issue of health care? Much more after a short break. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're back with Chris Jennings from the Kerry campaign and Rex Cowdery from the Bush campaign to answer the question, why should I vote for you? The issue today is health care. Of course, you're invited to join us. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email, TOTN, at npr.org. Our next question will go to Chris Jennings, and it's an email from Michelle Byrne in Akron, Ohio. My husband was recently laid off while we were living in Wisconsin. We were able to enroll in a state-sponsored program of health care. It was paid for by the state, but it was administered by local HMOs. It was not a state-run program. The care was excellent, and it was free to use, saving us literally thousands of dollars on COBRA costs. Will either candidate support or even explore a way to ensure such a program for every state to offer the underemployed, unemployed citizens and their children? Chris Jennings.
It's a very good question, Michelle. I'm actually an Ohio native, born and raised, and was just near your parts a little while ago. The issue of for people who have been laid off is critically important. They generally have had fairly good health care. They've been laid off. They can no longer afford their premiums for health insurance. The Bush administration tried a tax policy, which has been documented to be a failure recently. What Senator Kerry has proposed is that they provide a very, very generous tax credit, a 75% tax credit, to buy into the Federal Employees Health Benefit Plan, the same health care that members of Congress get, to make sure there is affordable option for people. The high-risk pools that it sounds like you're talking about really vary from state to state and generally are critically underfunded and not reliable. To the extent that you can provide those options, that is one option, but not the final solution.
And now Rex Cowdery of the Bush campaign.
We have an interesting difference between the campaigns here about whether our best approach at this point, since there isn't a magic bullet, there isn't a single solution to this, is actually to promote different strategies in different states to deal with this and to build the kind of federal policies that support that kind of state-based innovation. And I think, Michelle, that this was an excellent example of state approaches. The same kind of thing is happening up in Maine, for example, and that without knowing the right answer, to leap to a sort of federal government solution on many fronts. The Kerry plan, for example, most of the newly insured individuals come because low and middle income individuals are moved into Medicaid. Medicaid, a government program that, as we know, has troubles in multiple states. So I think that plus some of the other sort of federal solutions pose significant problems and risks.
Mm-hmm. Did you want to come back on that, Mr.?
Well, certainly. I think that no options are leaving up the states. You talk to any of the states, they'll say they do not have the resources to be able to address this issue. They do need to have assistance, not to provide new government expansions, to build on what already exists. That's exactly what the John Kerry policy does, more choices, more options built on what already exists. That is not a federal takeover.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Our next question goes to Mr. Cowdery. It comes by email from Andy Black. We often hear about the heavy burden of malpractice insurance and frivolous lawsuits, he writes. Please quantify the economic effects of these on the cost of health care. How much does it cost the individual? What are the total costs? What percentage of all money spent on health care does this represent? And most importantly, if these costs were substantially reduced, how much cheaper would health care be?
Neil and Andy, is it?
Yes, it's a, yeah.
First, I have to actually make a disclosure, that is that I'm a physician. So this is an issue that I care extremely deeply about. I think that much of the burden of our current litigation system is, well, severalfold. First of all, it's slow. Secondly, it rewards individuals in some cases who are not victims of malpractice, and secondly, it doesn't reward individuals who were the victims of medical errors. This is not a good or a just system. It also does, as you note, contribute to healthcare expenses. The malpractice premiums themselves, which are maybe 1%, are the least of the problem. The real problem is the way it causes doctors to approach medical care decisions rather than making decisions that really aim at value and take sort of the relative cost and value of interventions into account. Doctors practice defensive medicine, and the estimates of that are more in the range of 5%+ of healthcare expenditures.
Chris Jennings, this time you get the minute and 5 seconds.
Okay, well, thank you. Well, again, these aren't my numbers. This is the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office. You asked the direct question, how much overall cost would be done in aggregate for medical malpractice expenditures. If you eliminated them altogether, it would be 2% of all costs. If you applied the Bush arbitrary cap policy, which tends to penalize patients and not the frivolous lawsuits that we need to address, it would be 0.5%. Not anywhere near the double-digit inflation that we've had to deal with within the Bush administration in the last 4 years. The truth is that we do need to have a policy that addresses this problem for physicians, which includes going after lawyers who file frivolous lawsuits and preventing them from happening in the first place. The Carey policy has a three strikes and you're out policy that if lawyers file policies that are frivolous, you can no longer file them, and it requires a medical review for those cases in the first place to get to the courtroom. That's what we should be doing. But this whole idea that this is the ultimate problem that is the driving cause of healthcare costs is absolutely ludicrous.
Okay. Dr. Cowdery, did you want to come back?
I would actually like, I hope that there is a question about what we're doing about healthcare costs, because I think there is a substantial difference. This is a component of it. It's a component that has to do with the way people approach decisions, and it is a problem. If you ask which is the more effective way of dealing with this malpractice litigation problem, which is depriving people of obstetricians and gynecologists, of neurosurgeons, of trauma care, if you ask which is the more effective way, the one nonpartisan estimate of the two plans show that the Bush plan is four times as effective at reducing the costs associated with Med-Mal.
And we'll get 30 seconds back from Chris Jennings.
Today in this country, we have over half the states and over three-fifths or almost three-fifths of the population who live in states with caps of non-economic damages, which is the policy that the president proposes. None of those states have lower overall costs. None of those states have lower defensive medicine. None of those states have lower numbers of uninsured. In fact, some of those states that have those caps in place have the greatest problems. So there is no, as Rex pointed out, there is no magic bullet to the cost problem, but the idea that makes no sense and certainly is not based on any fact that I'm aware of.
Okay. Now let's get a call in. Kaysen joins us from Middletown, Rhode Island.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And to the host as well. Without saying what the opponent would or would not do, in other words, leave the other guy out of the answer altogether, please. For both folks, I think that one of the solutions that needs to really be looked at in a serious way is to let the general populace of this country have access to the same level of health care coverage that the government and Congress has at the same prices that those folks pay. I recall in the past debate between President Bush and Senator Kerry that Senator Kerry alluded to that. So without, blaming the other guy or calling the other guy a rat, please tell me what each candidate intends to do with regard to that.
Okay. It's your turn to go first. Christopher Jennings.
Well, I'd be happy to. John Kerry specifically does say that the public should have access as a choice, a voluntary choice. They don't have to, but to have the ability to buy into the Federal Employees Health Benefit Plan. And for special populations who have particular problems affording health care, he provides for tax credits to do just that. I think this is really important because it's not just a place to buy affordable health care, but it's also a place to buy reliable coverage, coverage that is meaningful and comprehensive. It does not provide for just catastrophic only. It provides that as an option, but it provides a range of different options for American citizens. And secondly, it does so in a way that does not discriminate in terms of insurance. You cannot be discriminated against when you opt into this plan. This is a thoughtful, balanced approach, and I hope that whether it's Republicans or Democrats, we come together and pass it sometime shortly.
And Rex Cowdery?
Well, the reason the federal plan works is because it's like any other employer-sponsored health plan. Namely, it is for the employees of that organization. So you don't have the problem of opting in and basically sick people opting in and driving up the premiums. Now, I must say, the premiums in the federal health plan are very high. They are not a bargain. It is a very generous plan. And in some ways, the way it structures coverage is part of the problem with our health care costs. And this is a fundamental difference. We believe that throwing substantial amounts, by the best nonpartisan estimate, $1.25 trillion over the next 10 years into this system, that actually you drive the problems with health care costs and health care expenditures. And what you need to do is change the way we approach health care decisions, the way we think about it, reintroduce value into people's decisions, both individuals and doctors, and trust them to make those decisions.
Kaysen, when you formulated your question, was it how much would it cost overall, or how much would it cost to an individual, and did you get an answer? I think Kaysen has left us, but Mr. Jennings, I didn't hear an answer from you on how much
it would
cost.
It would vary to some extent, because for lower-income populations, there are additional tax assistance available for small businesses, for workers in between jobs, and for the 55 to 65 population, there would be various tax credits that would be available. For example, the workers between jobs, it would pay for 75% of that premium, which actually is exactly what the employer-employee mix currently is in today's FEHBP. In other areas, it would be less of a federal assistance.
Okay. Final question. This will go to Mr. Cowdery. I just heard the Bush administration representative promote yet again HSAs. Exactly what are these accounts supposed to do for the huge numbers of people whose income is so low they have no money to put into an HSA? These are the people who need health care the most. I hear nothing from the Bush administration that will help them. That from Jim Satterfield in Lee's Summit, Missouri.
Oh, absolutely. These are incredibly flexible approaches, and we promote them because we believe they will actually change the way people think about healthcare decisions and make them more attentive to questions of value. Now, you're absolutely right. The crucial question is how you deal with the sort of equity issues, how you help low-income individuals get into the same kind of a system that we all have. And the administration, the president, has proposed a series, for example, of tax credits that are aimed at low-income to middle-income individuals that are split between funding the premium of the high-deductible policy and making a direct contribution into the family's health savings account. Now, that contribution can be supplemented by the small business, because, as we said, 80% of the families have members who are employed. And they can also be supplemented, for example, if the family is eligible for SCHIP, the state children's health insurance program. That money can be put into the health savings account.
And now Chris Jennings.
Well, I think the caller makes gives us a great opening for an important discussion, which is that the health savings account is really no more than a cost shift back to workers who have health care today. It reduces the value of the benefit, and there's no requirement that the savings that the employer receives as a consequence reinvests those dollars back for the individual's account. No requirement whatsoever. There is no requirement that they provide preventive care whatsoever. So, in many cases, most employers offer one option. So, if an employer chooses to go this way, they may drop their employer-based traditional health care for this health savings account. Now, that may be the direction that the Bush administration wants to go, but it is not another choice. It is supplanting policies that already exist.
We're talking with Christopher Jennings from the Kerry campaign and Rex Cowdery from the Bush campaign. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. 2 minutes to each on health care. Why should I vote for you? Christopher Jennings, you go first.
Well, thank you. The Kerry Edwards health care plan builds on the best that our current private public health system currently has to offer. It fixes what's broken. It provides more affordable choices of reliable insurance for all Americans. It creates no new government programs, no new mandates, no new price controls. It places science over ideology by supporting stem cell research, unleashing new cures and treatments, and creating new high-tech jobs, the type of jobs that we want in this country. It has a meaningful, enactable medical malpractice reform that is enactable. Talk is cheap. We haven't had any reforms in that area. It would lower prescription drug costs by allowing for importation of FDA-approved prescription drugs and empower Medicare to directly negotiate for better drug prices, which, of course, in this policy that the president recently enacted, explicitly prohibits Medicare to directly negotiate for better drug price. It would end up covering all children and nearly and 95% of all Americans, 95%, makes healthcare more affordable for businesses and workers alike, and is completely paid for by a rollback of the fiscally irresponsible Bush tax cuts for those making over $200,000 a year, which, by the way, is about 1.4% of the entire population. It is an example of what this election is all about. To govern is to choose. One needs to make a choice over which candidate has the greatest priority for making healthcare more affordable for workers and individuals alike, and equally as important for businesses, because businesses can no longer provide affordable healthcare and be competitive in a world marketplace unless we address these issues, and John Kerry does just that.
Chris Jennings of the Kerry Campaign, thank you very much for being with us today. Rex Cowdery, 2 minutes, why should I vote for you?
Well, the president's first-term record of accomplishment has really laid the foundation for a longer-term fundamental transformation of healthcare into a system that's more patient-centered, more information-rich, more provider-friendly, a system that empowers individuals and thereby helps control costs and improve quality and foster innovation by making the healthcare market work. You really do have a choice between the Kerry plan, which assumes that more of health care should be controlled by the government through doubling the Medicaid rolls, establishing a new national health plan that's run by the federal government, and establishing a new program of federal reinsurance, and the president's plan, which aims to empower patients and doctors to make the key decision, but creates incentives to encourage choices that are based on real health care value. That's one of the things that the health savings account aims to do. You have a choice between the Kerry plan, which according to the best estimate will cost $1.25 trillion over 10 years and require a rollback not just of taxes on those earning over $200,000, but pretty much the entire package of tax cuts across the income spectrum, as opposed to the president's plan, which has a longer-term vision, which includes health information technology and electronic medical records as the fundamental way to integrate our healthcare system without having it integrated from above by the government. That is, an integrated way to assure that the right care is delivered, that errors are prevented, and most importantly, that doctors and patients have an easy way to take value into account, to take evidence about what works into account.
Rex Cowdery, I wanted to thank you also, and thanks to everybody who wrote and called in during this segment. We're going to continue the series of programs, Why Should I Vote for You? And gentlemen, thank you for providing this much time today. When we come back from a short break, new CIA documents about China are released. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.